Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So, Matt, I'm thinking next week I'm going to start a diarrhea awareness group.
Really?
Yeah. It runs all week.
I'm a sucker for a good diarrhea joke.
Who isn't? I mean... Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good. Before we get into it, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. We're proud to be members of the Podbelly Network and associated with those shows, so you can go over there and find a list of different shows that you may not find anywhere else. So go over there, check them out, podbelly.com. Go check out the shows that are members of the network, and I guarantee you, you're going to find something you enjoy. We also want to thank tonight's sponsor, HelloFresh, and we'll talk more about them shortly. While you're on the internet doing your thing, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron, and we have three different levels that you can join at. Our $10 patrons get the video version of the main episodes, and you get to watch us do it. And I don't cut as much out, so sometimes you'll get to see... You know, if we have to take a pee break or something, and if we say something funny during the pee break, I'll leave that in. Any mistakes that we have that aren't too bad, I will leave in.
Right.
But go over there and check that out, patreon.com/graveyardtales. We also put up bonus episodes weekly of different topics, not necessarily in the same vein as what we would talk about on the main show. So you get funny stuff, you get some dirty stuff, you get personal stuff. So go over there.
Let's clarify the dirty stuff.
That's a good point. Clarify the language. Yeah.
Language is a little bit rougher.
Right.
On some of those.
And sometimes we talk about poop and pee and, you know.
Oh, yeah. The subject matter is sometimes actually dirty.
Yeah, like gross. Like, yeah, like
we're not running some adult Patreon.
No.
We don't
have an OnlyFans.
Maybe we should, Adam. I mean, maybe.
I think it would be, if we did anything like that, it'd be better to say, if you want to donate money, we'll keep our clothes on, not take our clothes off. I think more people would be willing to do that just to keep us clothed.
Oh.
So, Matt, that's all I've got for the housekeeping. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay, so tonight we're gonna flip it a little bit. We've done this in the past where Adam and I have each researched our own topic, didn't really discuss it with the other one. But it just so happens tonight that both of us are going to be talking about two different haunted bridges. And, you know, they're always fun. I mean, you know, the stories that are affiliated with haunted bridges are just, they're great.
They're great.
And I guarantee you, because I know I did as a kid, I'm sure you did in Texas as a kid. There's always some story, even if it's not necessarily close to you, there is always some story about some old bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's still in use or not, there's always, you'll get a really old historic bridge, you know, in an area, and the legends just come about.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's the case with the two bridges we're going to discuss tonight. So, Adam, why don't you start and tell us about the bridge that you researched?
Okay. So, like Matt was saying, every state, every city seems to have a haunted bridge of some sort. No matter what the name of it or what the legend of it is, every state, every city seems to have one. And we discussed one when we talked about the Goat Man. The Goat Man has a bridge that he's associated with. A lot of times, though, the history of the bridges are either stretched so far that it borders on unrealistic, or it's just completely made up. But the bridges that we're going to talk about tonight, they seem, and, you know, especially the one I got, it seems to be a little different. There is some legit history here. But I want to look at the Screaming Bridge in Arlington, Texas. And that's just up the road a ways from Ashley and I. And I'm talking Texas version of just up the road a ways. So
that it might be an hour and a half.
Yeah. You know? It's maybe half that. it's pretty close to us there in Arlington. And from what is said about this bridge, the history is pretty scary. And the hauntings are actually pretty interesting, too. So we need to get into that. But as we always say, go check the sources. You can find where we found this information and maybe dive a little deeper in there if you'd like to. Just go down to the bottom of our show notes and we have a sources page there. And you can find the original authored articles or books or whatever we are talking about. Now, the bridge that I'm talking about is located in River Legacy Park in Arlington, Texas. So need to look at that a little bit before we get into the bridge legend. Well, the park is located on Trinity River in Arlington. And Trinity River, big river, usually good fishing in a lot of spots there. But it's on the Trinity River, and it offers a wide range of nature opportunities for people who visit. The park is 1,031 acres of a floodplain. So it's a huge park.
Yeah.
Now, it was planned specifically as a place where animals could live with minimal interference from the park's hundreds of human visitors. So as they say, it's a, quote, sight to behold, because there are places that you can walk as a human visitor, but it's most of it is relegated to animals. So it's like a little nature preserve that you can walk through, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's set up in a way where, you know, humans can access certain areas, but maybe not all of them.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. There's some, I mean, you could access them, but it's going to be a trek, and there's not like a path to get everywhere. And they do have paths that you can take. So if you wanted to get to some of those other places, you'd have to go off the beaten path kind of thing.
So maybe some experienced hikers could get out there, but they're not.
Right.
It's not the routine
Right, right. If you're going there on the weekend, you're going to hang out at the walking bridge or some of the little rest areas and pavilions and stuff. You're not going to go bushwhacking and find some of these places. So it makes it pretty cool for the animals, because they can live out there pretty much undisturbed. And then you might run into deer or something as you're walking the path, because it's walking to another grazing area or something.
Remember, you're at a park in Texas. So.
Right, right.
Watch where you step.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Especially during the summer months. Winter, you're probably fine, but everywhere else, listen for... Now, the initial land that would become the park was donated to the city of Arlington by Berta Rose Brown and Margaret Rose May in 1976. So they donated all that land. And founded in 1986 to better preserve the local ecosystem and encourage appreciation for local flora and fauna, a variety of nature-based activities are encouraged, especially bird watching, bicycling, jogging, picnicking, or just, like they say, simply enjoying the splendor of nature on a sedate afternoon, quote unquote. Now, legend has it that it was the site of a battle during the Civil War. So this area, and there are, I'm not going to talk about it, but there are parts in this park that apparently there are Civil War ghosts that can be seen. So if you want to look into more of the history, go find the links and hop over there. But
you know what's funny is, as a Tennessean, I don't think about Texas when we talk about the Civil War.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's just one of those things. It doesn't occur to you. Well, I remember when you first said something like that, I was like, really? Civil War? And I know that, but it's one of those things that it doesn't click. It seems like it's the timing is south. Off in my brain or
yeah.
What's that?
Too far south.
Too far west.
yeah.
You know, you don't think about much beyond, well, much west of the Mississippi when you're referencing the Civil War. But
right,
it was. I mean, yeah. You know, it was there.
Yep. Now, this River Legacy Park that the Screaming Bridge is located in is said to be one of the most haunted locations in Arlington. So, I thought it was pretty cool, and I had to give Ashley props for finding this bridge for me to cover. She just happened to throw it out there, and I was like, started looking into it, and I was like, that's really cool, the history of all this. So let's go ahead and look at the legend of the Screaming Bridge. Now, I'm just going to read this legend as they have it written. One fall night, more than 50 years ago, several teenagers were carpooling home after their high school football team defeated its opponents by a landslide. Still riled up over the victory, driving responsibly definitely wasn't of utmost importance to the group. So we've all been there after a high school football game. Y'all win. You kind of go out riding around with your friends going crazy. That's what they were doing. Now, the bridge running through Arlington's River Legacy Park was just wide enough for one car at a time. So they say, hooting and hollering, the children's excitement drowned out all other noise, like that of a vehicle with no working headlights speeding towards them. By the time either party realized the imminent disaster, it was much too late to avoid it. So the cars collided head on, before erupting into a fiery explosion and plunging off the bridge into the Trinity River below. Nobody survived the crash.
Golly.
So it says...
That's brutal.
Yeah, yeah, that's rough. It says those who were not killed on impact allegedly died in the ensuing fire or, you know, in the water because they... the cars plummeted into that river below. So they either died from the impact, died from the fire, or they drowned when they hit the water. There was nobody survived this. Now, apparently this wasn't the first accident to occur on that bridge. So the city decided to close it to vehicular traffic and to build a new bridge not too far away from it that was wider and safer. And the old bridge is now only open to foot traffic. So that's the Screaming Bridge. Only you can only get there by walking. You have to take a decent walk through this park to get to that bridge. So you're not going to be able to get a car over there anymore. Says, but the tragic event of that night still seems to reverberate through this bridge. So a lot of people have said that if you stand on the bridge and you're very quiet, you can hear the occasional sounds of oncoming vehicles. The sounds of the cars seem to get louder as the sun goes down. So the thought here is it's the Stone Tape theory. You're standing on the bridge. You can hear the vehicles coming toward each other in, you know, recorded by the bridge itself or the land around it. Because like you and I have talked about before, Matt, when there's a tragic incident, there's like a sludge that I call it, like a paranormal sludge that you can feel it when you walk into a room. It's dripping from the walls or something like that. And it's very, lack of a better term, it's very sticky. It just, you know, sticks to the area of mass casualties or right. In any place with high emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, others have said that when you're walking along the bridge at night, if you stop on the bridge and you look down into the Trinity River, you can see faint outlines of tombstones glowing in the water. And apparently there's one for every person that died that night in the car wreck.
Huh. That's interesting.
That it is interesting because if it's real, it would have to be a projection from the spirit because there are no graves right there.
I know. And that's where that part of the story goes a little for me.
Yes.
Because it's almost like that. That's like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you open up your mind enough to accept paranormal activity, there's even limits to that.
Oh, sure.
You kind of get used to, well, this happens, but this doesn't really ever happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. It would be really, really cool if that's what happened.
Yeah. But again, like you, I think this is where it goes from history to legend and actual things that people have witnessed to embellishments of these things. If the story had been that you look down into the water and you see people, I'll give you that. I won't really argue that. But when it's tombstones, there were no tombstones there. So I got to question that a little bit.
Yeah, but, you know, the embellishments that happen over the years, as this story is told and retold, they're cool. I like them.
Because when
you hear a story like this, you know what you're getting, okay?
Oh, yeah.
You're not getting some one-on-one personal experience. You're not getting something that is dissimilar to anything else you've heard at other similar places.
Right.
And so you take it just like what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a cool little legend. You know, even if it's based in historical fact, it's been gussied up over the years.
Yep.
And even have different variations. Just, you know, appreciate that.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's what I always say. You know, I said something about the tombstones, but I say that in that, you know, that would be a really cool thing. It's highly unlikely, but it's a good example of how these stories, they alter over time.
Yeah.
You know, people add their own little spicy detail.
they take on a life of their own.
Yeah, but it makes
no
great
pun
stories.
Intended. Oh, it does. So it's also said that if you walk out on the bridge and you stand in the middle of the bridge at a certain hour, a lot of people say that's midnight. I'm not going to argue what time, you know, whether it's midnight or the witching hour or whatever. But apparently, if you walk out there at a certain time of night, you'll see a ghostly fog start rolling onto the bridge from either side of the bridge. And then you'll see a set of headlights approach from one side, and you'll witness this ghostly spectral version of the crash that happened that night, complete with tires screeching, the crushing of metal on metal, followed by the haunting screams coming from all around you as this crash replays itself over and over and over again every night at the same time of night.
Okay. So you've got to be standing out on the bridge to witness this. So
apparently,
you're right in the middle of it.
Yeah, apparently you have to be on the bridge to witness it. That you can have someone standing on the bridge and they witness it, but if you're not standing on the bridge, you don't witness anything.
So there, you're just going to have the stories of the brave souls that were willing to stand out there
mm-hmm.
and witness it.
Yep.
Which I'm sure there's a few.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get a story like that, from
no.
one person.
No, that seems to be a collective of several people that have done it. And, I think to me, there's, some of that seems like it could be embellished, like the fog and everything. But I think if we're looking at the stone tape theory, you might see the lights coming.
Mm-hmm.
More likely you would hear the sound of the cars wrecking and the screaming. As far as if we're looking into what the stone tape theory has proven to us in other cases, the fog and the oncoming light seem to be, well, at least the fog seems to be a little embellishment to me. And I've never stood out there, but it's just from what we've looked into in the past, that seems like that's part of the embellishment of the story. But
yeah.
I'm willing to believe that there are screams and screeching of tires and stuff like that heard.
Yeah, that's intense,
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a haunting of any type, that's pretty intense. Because if you have to be standing out there to witness it, you're in the middle of that.
Yep.
And you've got to really build up the courage to go, okay, if this happens the way it's supposed to happen, then it's going to make it feel like I'm going to standing right between yep. these two cars that are about to collide.
Yep. You've got to hold your ground because you will experience it, not just witness. You will most likely experience the incident being there.
Yeah.
So that's the legend and the hauntings that have been reported there. But was there really a wreck that happened? Because, we get these that maybe there wasn't even a wreck. Well, yes, there was a wreck at this one. So I'm going to read this article that I found of the real incident. Now, this is off of medium.com and it was authored by true crime podcaster Nikki Young. So thank you, Nikki, for doing this research. Give you the props here for that. You can find the link and it will give you her podcast name and all that stuff if you want to go check her out. She says, it occurred on the night of February 4th, 1961, when a car filled with six Arlington teenage girls plunged off of a burned out wooden bridge where then Arlington Bedford Road approached the railroad tracks in far north Arlington. So the Arlington High School co-eds were out joyriding after leaving a movie that evening. And as the girl's car approached the crossing at approximately 45 miles an hour, the incline of the Arlington-Bedford Road and the darkness prevented them from seeing that the bridge was out. So at 9:30, their vehicle left the road and impacted the other side of the ravine, landing upside down. Instantly killed were Mary Lou Goldner, 16, and Claudine Jean Reeves, 17. By 2 a.m. Sunday morning, Kathy Fleming was dead on arrival at Baylor Hospital, bringing the total deaths to three. So newspaper articles from February 6 revealed that another youth, Bill Young, had slowed for a train crossing the road just beyond the bridge over the ditch and noticed that the bridge was out, so stopping just 3 feet shy of the ravine. He had narrowly missed plunging off the road himself, and he tried to warn the girl's vehicle by honking his horn while he was backing up to get away from the bridge. So it's thought that his warning may have scared the driver into speeding up to pass his vehicle, which contributed to their speed when they left the road. It was this witness who notified authorities of the accident. So she said, so why was the bridge out? Well, she said it appears to have been a prank. The bridge had previously been burned down due to arson, and it's thought that a couple of youngsters decided to play a prank and remove the barricades and warning signs that the bridge was out. So
now that's terrible.
Yeah, somebody burned the bridge, and then some kids thought it would be funny to remove the warning signs. That's not funny, kids. If you're
no.
If you're listening to this at Graveyard Tales PSA, leave warning signs and barricades up. They're there to keep people from dying.
That's right.
Let's not do that. So she goes on to say that on March 10th, 1994, Raylene Johnston and Tammy Lynn Dodson tried to outrace an oncoming train, which impacted the passenger side of their truck. One of the occupants was knocked out of the vehicle while the other remained trapped in the burning vehicle. Both women died at the scene of the accident. So after the 1994 accident, this stretch of Greenbelt Road was closed to all traffic. With its closing, the myth of the Screaming Bridge moved to what's now known as the Screaming Bridge at River Legacy Park. So she says the bridge that's now known as Screaming Bridge was said to be the site of another multiple vehicle accident, but she was unable to verify that information. So first, thank you, Nikki, for doing that research and putting this article out there. Like I said, go check the sources. You can find her there. But that's saying there was a bridge that had two accidents, one of them being the multiple teenage girls falling off the bridge and wrecking and dying, which is supposedly what generated the hauntings at the Screaming Bridge. However, the bridge that's now said to be the Screaming Bridge is not the one that these wrecks occurred on. So, Matt, tell me, what do you think that means the hauntings are made up, or do you think there could be a shift with one bridge torn down? Maybe they had to shift to another bridge.
I don't know. That's what would come to mind is if everything is accurate up to that point, and then the bridge where it occurred is no longer there, that it shifts to another bridge. But to me, that shift seems more like an intelligent haunting, which for this kind of story doesn't fit.
Right. Okay? Right.
This sounds like, you know, a stone tape type experience, almost textbook. So I don't see where a haunting like this would shift.
Right. Right.
Now, if there was some intelligence about it, if there was a spectral creature that was at a certain bridge, then yeah, I would say there's probably a chance that it shifted to another bridge.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about a stone tape shifting. You know,
yeah, I'm with you.
That'd be like a murder happening in a house, and then like 3 miles down the road in a similar house, the haunting occurred because mm-hmm. the original house was gone. You know, I've never heard of anything like that in all the research that I've done.
No, because you would think that even if the bridge was torn down, like they said it was, that haunting would still occur in that area.
Uh-huh.
That you would see cars, like we've seen with spirits and stuff, walking on a different level than what the ground is at now, or walking through walls because the floor plan was different than it is now. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These cars would be, quote unquote, going over this bridge that's not there, but they would still be at bridge level. So I think with the Screaming Bridge legend, in my opinion, there may have been these hauntings at the old bridge, but then when it got torn down, the legends continued, even though the bridge is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they just said, oh, well, it's this bridge, just to make it make the life of the story continue. Right. Right. Yeah. So
and it probably had no maliciousness behind it. It's just as the stories are passed from generation to generation, you know, as a young person, you hear a story like this from your parents or your grandparents or something like that. You tend to associate it with what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if that mm-hmm. old bridge is long gone and enough people hear that story, as they become adults, in their remembrance, they associate it with, well, this bridge has been the only bridge I've known, you know, since a child, not thinking about the fact that it may have happened at a completely different
mm-hmm.
location.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. So I liked that when I started reading the stories of the hauntings and the history. I thought that was a really cool legend there. And then when I found that article by that podcaster, Nikki, I thought, oh, well, this is cool because it kind of ties in the legitimacy of what happened to the legend, but it shows there are some discrepancies. So what do you got, Matt?
All right. So I'm talking about the Goldbrook Bridge in Stowe, Vermont.
Hmm.
Okay. Considered to be the most haunted bridge in Vermont.
Hmm.
And funny enough, there's a lot of them, of these old covered bridges, you know, all across Vermont. I mean, tons of them. There's not as many of them now. A lot of them aren't standing anymore. But this one has survived the time. So the Goldbrook Bridge is a covered bridge, as I said, in Stowe, Vermont. The bridge itself dates back to the 1840s. Now, it is a Howe Truss design, which was very common at the time, and in appearance, it looked like many of the other bridges that were found along the Gold Brook.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said earlier, it's the only one still standing. And the Howe Truss design was just an architectural design, but it was easy for, you know, local carpenters to recreate. And build a strong, sturdy bridge, you know, without having to have access to a lot of special materials or anything like that. It would either be impossible for them to get, or it would send the cost to, you know, at the time, to something they couldn't afford. So this was a good, solid design. that, you know, a local group could get together and actually construct, and it'd be worthwhile.
And those covered bridges are cool looking.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They're fantastic. You know, there's something that's so quaint, so, you know, bucolic about seeing those images of covered bridges. But they do have a creep factor.
Oh yeah. They make me think of Beetlejuice, the movie Beetlejuice.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought that they were kind of spooky. Even without a legend or a haunting or anything associated with it. But this bridge in particular, the Goldbrook Bridge, has been the subject of numerous reports of paranormal activity, and it's even referred to most commonly by the name of the spirit that supposedly haunts it. So, according to legend, a young woman named Emily lost her life on the bridge, thus giving the Goldbrook Bridge the moniker Emily's Bridge.
Hmm.
And it's funny because when you search for Emily's Bridge, you get all this information. When you search for the Goldbrook Bridge, you get like three or four, and then it all goes to also Emily's Bridge.
So it basically got a new name then.
Yeah, the name stuck.
Yeah.
Okay. But let's take a look at the legend behind Emily's Bridge. Now, as we were talking about earlier, like with many legends, the story of Emily has no real historical evidence to support it at all. There's a few stories on how Emily may have died on the bridge. The first version of the legend has her waiting at this spot for her lover as they're about to elope.
Hmm.
Now, while she's waiting, it gets later and later, and she realizes he's not coming. And so reportedly, in her heartbreak, she hung herself from the rafters under the bridge.
Jeez. You know,
and that's a creepy sight. You know, you roll up to the covered bridge, and there's somebody hanging from the rafters.
Yeah.
You know, underneath it.
Ugh. Yeah.
But another version of the legend says that as Emily was arriving to the church to get married, she realized then that the groom was nowhere to be found. And so in her jilted state, she was so distraught that she jumped into the family wagon and drove off, and just not being able to focus on anything but her sorrow, she led the team of horses at a really, really fast rate of speed, as fast as horses pulling a wagon could do.
Right.
Now, when she tried to navigate the turn before the bridge, the horses and the wagon and Emily crashed over the bank onto the rocky brook, and there were no survivors. So Emily didn't survive, and I guess the horses didn't either.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That was a bad wreck.
Yeah.
For a carriage wreck. That was a bad wreck.
You know, you don't think about that being
a single carriage wreck. Yeah.
Yeah. In the 1920s, it was very common to hear how Emily was driving her car and missed the bridge. Okay. And drives off the embankment and right into the Gold Brook. Now, all of these stories potentially happened sometime between 1849 and 1949. That's a big range. Okay.
That is a big range. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about 100 years. It happened sometime in this century. Okay. You can't hammer it down any further than that.
Yeah. Give me at least maybe a decade. I can work with a decade.
You know, give me a roundabout, you know, happening in the last 100 years. You know, we go from she hung herself to she took a horse and carriage over the river to she drove her car.
Right. Big leaps in
big
details.
Leaps. Yeah. But again, that's how the stories evolve over time. But there's, as I said, there's no historical proof that there was ever any crash or ever any person named Emily that died on or around the Goldbrook Bridge. And many people attribute the story to one Nancy Stead, S-T-E-A-D, Stead, right?
Or Steed.
Well, okay, so that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
So, Nancy, if I'm mispronouncing your name, I apologize. It looks like Stead. It might be Steed, either way. But she was a longtime resident of Stowe, and she was a columnist for the Stowe Reporter. And she has claimed that she started the rumor several decades ago.
Huh.
Now, according to Stead, in the early 1970s, tales of witchcraft were becoming really common and popular. So one day, while sitting around a pond with a friend named Hazel Carlson, Stead and Carlson decided to come up with some witchcraft of their own to scare the kids that were swimming in the pond. So she says, the quote, the girls were buzzing about witchcraft and covens. And we said we should probably tell them about this bridge and the girl Emily who died there. Stead said. She said, each of us would add our own line to the story and boom, it just took off and went crazy. But it was just made up.
Huh.
And that may very well be the case.
It may. I mean, that's how some of these legends do get started.
You usually don't, you're usually not able to pinpoint them to the actual person.
No,
though. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that, if that is how it happened, that she started it with some friends there just on a lark, how popular it has become. I mean, it's all over the internet and everything. That's wild how much popularity it gained.
And you know, I'm sure there's people out there be like, well, you know, it's her responsibility to set the record straight. She has.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't claim that this was true and never did. But once something like this grows, even if you are responsible for the story getting out there, you can't do anything to stop it.
No.
It spreads like wildfire, and it may go unspoken for years.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, let me tell you the story about this bridge and Emily and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, that little kid is telling their buddy and their buddy and their buddy, and they grow up to be adults. And here it goes. And even though she's standing here going, hey, y'all, I just made this up. It doesn't matter. It's taking on a life of its own.
Well, and once things like that get going, and not just this, but in other aspects, it takes precedence over the truth or the correction of that.
Right.
Because it's easier for people to just say, oh, no, there was a car wreck at this bridge,
mm-hmm.
than to say, well, no, there wasn't really a car wreck. I was wrong. It was a story made up by this person. And so it's just easier for the legend to keep going.
That's right.
Than to have a redacted or fixed version of the story.
And in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Let the legends go. Like I said earlier, they're fun. As long as you don't have somebody out there just beating their fist and demanding that you accept this as the absolute unadulterated truth,
mm-hmm.
then I got a problem with them. But you know, it's fun. Tell it. It's a legend. You know, it's fun. But that's not really why people thought the bridge was haunted in particular. The first mention of a haunting around this bridge actually came around in 1968. A high school student was using a Ouija board on the bridge and claimed that a spirit named Emily presented herself. And others have since claimed similar experiences. Now, Stead refutes this, saying, no, it was later than that. And it really doesn't have anything to do with a high school girl going. And then there's some stories that say, okay, this girl in high school originally did this as a report. And then much later came out with almost the admission of, okay. You know, we didn't look all this stuff up in the library. We actually went and used a Ouija board.
Huh.
And so that part of it came a little bit later, according to this story. So you can tell if we're talking about 68, I read the same description of that story, and it was listed as 1974. So even with some things that may have some historical background, it's still, you know, murky water here.
Right, right.
But many of the visitors who have gone and gone to the bridge have claimed to have experienced something that seems paranormal. Now, many people report noises such as footsteps or banging, or this one, ropes tightening.
You know that
sound?
Kind of a squeaky, yeah.
That sound that it makes when somebody's hanged. Yeah. But screaming has also been heard, and it appears to be a female scream. Now, others report hearing the sound of clothes rustling, while others claim to have heard maniacal laughter.
Well, that's creepy.
Yeah, that is creepy. But photos of the bridge, they've displayed the lovely and totally credible floating orbs.
Yeah,
you know how Adam and I feel about orbs, you know. Maybe one in a million is actually an orb that you catch.
There is a possibility that they're legit, but unless you see it with your own eyes, if you just catch it in the camera, there's going to be lots of questions.
That's right. You know, so I always think if you see an orb, be in awe of the fact that you're actually seeing one, and just share it with your friends and family that aren't going to think you're completely making it up. Because for the most part, you know, people are going to think you made it up. And if you take a picture of it and it shows up, then they're going to absolutely believe that you made it up.
Yeah.
That's just how it goes. Other visitors to the bridge have actually reported seeing a white spirit-like apparition near the bridge. Some visitors, and this is very common in these reports, they've claimed that scratch marks will appear on their vehicle or even on their own skin while visiting the bridge.
That's creepy.
And the other funny thing is that just like with the screaming bridge, in Arlington, most of the events are reported to happen around the same time. For this bridge, it's 3:30 a.m.
Okay.
So that is the witching hour at Emily's Bridge.
Yeah.
Now, you know, one thing I look, if we stopped right there, we'd be like, okay, great. You know, Adam shared a cool story with a legend. Matt shared a cool story with a legend. But, you know, I always have to kind of poke around. And I found,
you gotta just ruin it.
I found a review on TripAdvisor. Okay. And this review comes from user Solutions123, who says, quote, "We got there just before sunset. As I was reading the sign, I felt my husband's presence behind me. When I turned around, he wasn't behind me. He was in front of the bridge taking pictures. I also took several pictures, and a few look like there was a fuzzy spot in them. Could that be Emily's ghost?" That was one of the few. Most of the ones of the reviews that said anything about haunted or ghosts or anything, the review says, didn't see anything haunted.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Nothing paranormal happened while I was there. So you got to be careful when you search, because you get a lot of the negative.
Oh, yeah. That's most of what you see is no ghost, wasn't there, or somebody calling the believers a cuckoo brains because they didn't see anything, something like that.
Yeah. But I kept digging. I wasn't satisfied. And I found this. And this was really intriguing, okay, and entertaining to read. Because there have been plenty of paranormal investigators that claim to have experienced something at Emily's Bridge, even if the spirit of Emily wasn't responsible. Now, paranormal investigator Alan Barnes and his team spent a night at the Goldbrook Bridge hoping to do just that, experience something, anything. Now, according to Barnes, he was standing alone on the bridge in the dark around 1 a.m., and he heard the distinct sound of something scraping against wood no more than 5 feet away from him.
Eesh.
The bridge is not necessarily a quiet place, and Barnes explained that the rush of the water 10 feet below was loud enough to prevent him from effectively using his radio to communicate with his other team members. Yet the scraping felt close and was very audible. So this wasn't weird. Like, what did I hear? What was that? This had to be loud enough for him to hear it over the water, because he can't even use his radio. He can't hear well enough, and all his team members are hearing is the sound of the water.
So that was, it was either really loud or really close or both.
Yeah.
If he's able to pick it out.
That's right. Now, Barnes also reports that he felt something brush against him a few times, despite turning on his camera to reveal that he was indeed alone. He also states that his team had considerable difficulty maintaining a battery charge on their equipment, with Barnes himself going through 3 batteries for his camera in about 30 minutes. And he states that one battery alone should have given him at least 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. And the battery thing we've heard on a lot of places.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that's a standard, a spirit will draw the energy from a battery to try to help manifest or perform some kind of feat for you. They need the energy from the battery.
I've always just wondered if, you know, because it drains the battery, that when you come with all that equipment that's battery powered, if you're not just bringing an energy source to you know, feed those spirits, why not bring a bigger energy source?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Why not bring like a daggum battery from a Tesla in there?
Or a generator. Just bring like a diesel generator.
Just set it down in wherever you're investigating, and then start looking around and see. See if there's a catalyst for activity. Yep.
I think I can't point to a specific case, so I may be wrong, but I feel like there was an investigator or investigators that created a miniature Tesla coil and brought it to a site.
I have heard or read something about this. When you said Tesla coil, it set off a bell in my head. I've heard that before.
And so I feel like it has been done, but I don't know why Tesla coil, when we have other technology now that, like you said, car battery, something that's got a lot of energy stored in it that they can use. And Matt, maybe that's what we need to do on our next investigation. You bring a car battery, I'll bring a car battery, and we'll just set it down and say, here you go. Draw off of this and let's have a conversation.
That's right. You know, it'd be interesting to try. I mean, what's it going to hurt other than people go, look at these two idiots sitting out here with these car batteries. What the hell are they doing?
Having a seance with a car battery.
We'd put a Ouija board on top of the batteries. So now back to the story. So here Alan is. He's out on this bridge. He's done heard the scraping of the wood. He feels like something's touched him, and his camera isn't working. He's going through batteries. So he's beginning to get a little anxious as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Alan then claims that he heard the scraping noise, but this time it sounded as though it was rushing toward him. He suddenly felt something nudge him from behind, which led to him running off of the bridge. Off into the water, just, I'm going to leave the bridge and go out.
Yeah.
And so that's what he did. And he was
get me the heck out of here.
Yeah. He was guided by the lights on the car in the distance, where another one of his team members was monitoring the stationary cameras on a monitor. Now, when he got to the car, Barnes team member Lords informed him that the four stationary cameras had all gone down.
Weird.
And so they were like, all four of them? Yeah, all four of them. And, you know, that's just his camera batteries were going down. The stationary ones were going down. So they were really feeding it.
Yeah, that would be really a feat if it wasn't paranormal and just all of those batteries died at the same time. There would be something really weird happening.
Right. Yeah. That just doesn't seem like it'd have to be like this crazy magnetic anomaly or something. You know, it's just sucking the energy out of the battery. So as he was talking to Lords, one of his other team members came up, Claire Hines. And so they decided, we're going to call it quits. We've been out here for about an hour or so. We've got a ton of footage. Well, they had actually been out there longer than an hour. This whole process of him being on the bridge and then getting back to the car took about an hour. So they'd been out there a while. So they had a lot of footage to go through. It's like, why don't we just call it? Let's go look at this. And so they drive back to the hotel where they were staying. Funny enough, they have to drive over the bridge to go back to the hotel. I'd be like, man, we're taking the long way around. You know, I'm not driving down there.
Or why didn't you just stay on the other side?
Yeah,
that's right. Stay parked over there.
All right, Adam, let's take a minute and talk about one of our longtime sponsors, HelloFresh. Now, if you haven't heard of HelloFresh, where you been, man?
I mean,
it's fantastic. How have you not heard about it? But if you haven't, HelloFresh is a meal delivery service where you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipe delivered right to your door. You can skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. And I know my kids get super excited when they come home and they see that HelloFresh box sitting on the porch.
Oh, yeah.
Because they know, hey, not only is tonight's dinner going to be great, we're going to get to help.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it's just phenomenal. And, right now, we've got school, we've got softball, we've got workouts, all this stuff. We're hardly at home. And so running to the grocery store and all that is, and even having the time to prep a meal is just, it's not there. So HelloFresh makes our hectic fall weeknights a little bit easier and definitely more delicious. Now, their quick and easy meals, including 20-minute meals, low prep, easy cleanup options, take the stress out of mealtime with time-saving, no-fuss recipes ready in a snap. And now you can enjoy the freshest fall flavor. Every HelloFresh recipe includes ripe, just picked produce that travels from the farm to your door in less than a week. It's amazing.
I know. It's incredible. I love how they do that. They get it to you so quick. It's quicker than a grocery store, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
And fall is the perfect time to cozy up with some delicious sweets. So you can get the whole family involved with HelloFresh's limited edition kid-friendly baking kits, which is just awesome because Michael is the same way as your kids, where he gets excited when HelloFresh is here and we let him help. We let him mix the stuff and all that. And it's really cool to me that they now have the kid-friendly baking kit so we can teach him to bake as well and he can get involved with that. And HelloFresh isn't just for dinners. You know, you're thinking, well, maybe I don't want to do dinners with HelloFresh. Well, you can shop HelloFresh Market for quick breakfast, wholesome snacks, and even desserts. You'll find everything you need to satisfy your cravings without stepping foot in the grocery store or mini mart, which, like Matt said, that just gets more and more hectic. With the more hectic your schedule is, the more hectic going to the grocery store is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to get on board the HelloFresh train like Matt and I and our families, then all you need to do is go to HelloFresh.com/graveyard65 and use our code graveyard65, that's GRAVEYARD65, and you'll get 65% off plus free shipping.
Yeah, all you got to do is go to HelloFresh.com/graveyard65 and use our code GRAVEYARD65, that's GRAVEYARD65, to get 65% off plus free shipping. But once they got back to their hotel, they're standing outside, and Claire, who I mentioned earlier, she notices something. At the very top left-hand edge of the back window was a partial handprint, the top portion of a palm with four fingers pointed straight down. Now, they
That's
said
weird.
The handprint looked like it was made by a young woman. Okay. I don't know about that. If you're that good, you can see a handprint. It's, you know, unless it's just huge and you're like, well, let's see there. It's a giant, but it's probably a
man. Forensic genius at that point.
I think they wanted it to be, but
forensic savant.
Based on the position and the orientation of the handprint, the team determined that she would have had to have been crouched on the roof of the vehicle, placing her hand on the top window or top of the window so that her fingers pointed towards the ground.
Yeah.
Now,
or
that's that. Yeah, I think if they see this handprint, that's dead on. Because how else would you get a handprint in that position on that car?
I mean, either crawling up the window backwards.
Yeah.
Like crab walking kind of thing. Or if you put your hand down, turned kind of backwards to push yourself up, maybe. But I don't know why anybody would do that on that position of a car. There would be no reason to put your hand like that. It doesn't seem like a position that someone would normally get into everyday usage of the car.
And it didn't say, it just said car. It didn't say what kind of car, but it said car. So I implied that is a sedan. It is not a pickup truck.
Right.
Because if they had said, oh, it's on the back window of a pickup truck, I was like, oh, there's more of a chance that somebody might have been in the bed of the truck and moving around back there. But if it's just a car, if I'm on the ground, or hell, if I'm even in the car and I somehow reach around, it's going to be hard for me to get my hand into that kind of orientation to pull a joke. You know, it's really, you'd have to try, and not that that's not what happened, but this is an experienced paranormal team. This is not a bunch of amateurs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may not have their own TV show, but they know what they're doing.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
They're not just kids out there having fun where one of them decides, hey, this will be great. Let's screw up this entire investigation by me playing a prank.
Okay. Right.
If you're really a paranormal investigator and you've got a team and you don't do that kind of stuff.
No, that would invalidate everything you found.
Exactly. I mean, you think about it. One prank would ruin that entire night of anything they captured because...
Or your entire history.
True.
Of research.
True. So I don't think that happened. Could it have been an old handprint that they just didn't notice until then? Because everything was all, they're all hyped up now and wanting to find something? Maybe. Mm-hmm. But again, why? Why? What were you doing then that you would be on the roof of your car or put your hand in that position? And
maybe look, something we can't talk about on a family show. I mean,
just one hand?
Just one, yeah.
Usually it takes both.
Well, for some.
But, you know, my thinking is I drive my vehicles every day, you know. Yep. I don't have handprints all over my window, and I have gross kids, okay? I mean, my kids are disgusting. You hand one of my, if one of my children, ages 13 and 10, ask you for your cell phone and you give it to them even for a minute, when you get it back, it's almost going to have like a crust. It's like, what were you doing? How could you tolerate something like this being on your hands?
It's glazed like a donut.
Exactly. Every time, even now. I won't even touch Brooks's phone. I'm just like, get your phone, son. You know? Because it's gross. And I don't have these handprints on my windows. And my kids are the ones that would try to climb on the roof for something.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so I don't think that you just routinely get handprints on your glass and either don't wipe them off when you notice them, or they don't come off in the rain or the car wash or whatever else. So I included that story because that was really the best investigative story that had the most compelling evidence that something was going on. This is a case, I think, Adam, and you tell me what you think, where the haunting occurs and then the legend gets tied to it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when you were saying about the different versions of that story. I feel like it's one of those situations where people have witnessed or experienced something, and there is no definitive answer as to why this is occurring, so they make it up. Yeah. And it's different for maybe every generation has a different story. That's why it's within 100 years, because every generation comes up with their own version of why there is paranormal activity at this bridge. Mm-hmm. So it went with horse and carriage. Before that, it was hanging because they didn't have horse and carriage much in that area. And then it went to vehicles, and then it was like Ouija board. It seemed to progress with the culture. So I do believe, like you, that if there is paranormal activity at this bridge, then the paranormal activity came first, and the stories of what happened came afterward to try to explain what was happening.
Or there's already this Emily legend, okay, that's been floating around. Whether it's decades old, or whether Nancy Stead came up with this story on her own and it just grew, the story was already out there. So now stuff starts happening at the bridge, because there is some speculation that because all those other bridges were so similar, and they're all gone, that if anything like that actually happened, it most likely happened at one of the other bridges. This is the one that the legend gets tied to because it's the one left.
Yeah. And the thing we don't look at, Matt, though, that I have to throw out there is tulpa type activity. I try to bring it up as much as I can because it's fascinating to me that tulpas can be a thing. But if there is this amount of activity and energy put into the legends about this bridge, could that have then caused these quote unquote spirit interactions?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a kind of poltergeisty, but it would be a spirit tulpa in a sense.
But and again, when we're talking about a tulpa in this sense, we're talking about a legend that's permeated that area for, you know, years mm-hmm. and years and years. You've got a lot of people that may think about it, widely believe it.
Yep.
When does it start? Right about this time of year, you know, soon as old Walmart starts putting out the pumpkin spice and, you know, the Halloween costumes and everything, people start kind of sharing these little stories. You start talking about Halloween's when you were a kid, you know, you start talking about what you did last year, what you want to do this year, all this stuff. And these stories inevitably come up. So all of a sudden you've got a large group of people discussing a particular legend, even if they're not discussing in detail the same, there's a lot of energy there, and all of a sudden there's a lot of weird stuff happening at the one standing bridge in Stowe, Vermont. So I'm with it. I love the idea of a tulpa. And you know, when you introduce that to somebody for the first time and they don't really understand what you're talking about and you try to explain it, they look at you like you have three heads.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But the interesting thing, and this is what I always use when this subject comes up, and it's not with you. I say, well, look, if I told you that you can believe that you're sick in your mind and mm-hmm. then your body can physically manifest that kind of illness, even though you don't really have it, but you manifest it, what would you say to that? I mean, that's widely understood in the medical community yep. that can happen. So yep. if your mind can do that with your own body, then why can't a collection of minds that's concentrated on a specific subject not do something very similar?
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I get it. You're going into an area that is Adam's, you know, largest pet peeve, and that's the whole mass hysteria thing. That if we're all thinking about it, and one person says, "Hey, you see that?" then everybody believes that they see the same thing. Okay.
Yep.
If we were all in a crowd at that bridge and some that happened, then I could buy into that. Okay, the power of suggestion. But we're talking about multiple experiences over, you know, a course of years and years. You know, I think, and again, you know, take a good chunk of them and pitch them. You know, they're just made up. But then you boil down the rest, and you're going to find some that are absolutely, whatever happened, these people 100% believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not trying to fool you. They're not trying to scare you. They're trying to explain to you what happened to them when they went and visited this bridge.
Right.
So there's no other explanation for it other than it really happened. And we don't yet understand exactly why.
Right.
But, you know, either way you look at it, I mean, we're talking about two fairly famously haunted bridges tonight. What do you guys think? Maybe you have a haunted bridge that's not too far from you, like Adam. You know, maybe you have heard stories of other haunted bridges, and I would imagine the legends are similar. Somebody died, somebody was killed, somebody was in an accident, somebody committed suicide off of it, whatever. You've probably got something along those lines if there's a haunted bridge near you. Let us know about it.
Yes,
what do
please.
What do you think about these two bridges? Let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It's a great environment to share those kind of stories. Nobody's going to make fun of you. We all just want to hear them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what's fun, especially this time of year. Everybody wants to hear a good ghost story.
And it's a private group. So remember, you can share in that group, and your normal Facebook friends on there are not going to see it.
Yeah.
pop up. You have to be a member of the graveyard to see what's posted in the graveyard. So don't think, oh, well, I want to talk about this on here, but I don't want my Aunt Nellie seeing me talk about the ghosts in her house. Well, she's right. Not going to see it.
That's right. That's right. We're also on Instagram and Twitter. Just go and search Graveyard Tales. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. It brings the show up the charts, making it more likely that Graveyard Tales will pop up in a search for paranormal podcasts or ghost mm-hmm. stories or something like that. It helps bring more people into the graveyard. Our website is graveyardpodcast.com, and there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and you can become a patron. And if I promise you, if you are a patron and you're going to get to see the uncut video of tonight's show, you are in for a huge surprise. It is absolutely hysterical. It's I promise you, it's worth it to get this video. Yep.
It happened to Matt, but it startled me too. So,
oh man, I tell you what, this was fun. We're going to do this again. We do this. Oh, yeah. We're good for one or two a year on the show like this. And it's a lot of fun. But thanks for tuning in. And until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.